This is Noah Kadner, and you're listening to the Virtual Production Podcast. Paul Debevec is the Director of Research for Creative Algorithms and Technology at Netflix. A pioneer in new techniques such as photogrammetry and image-based lighting, Debevec's work formed the basis of breakthrough visual effects for movies like The Matrix, Spider-Man, and Avatar. He's won 2 Academy Awards and an Emmy for his efforts. But, as with many of our guests, his path to his current career in the movies started very differently.
I liked visual effects movies as a kid. I'm just old enough to have seen Star Wars during its initial run in theaters. And I saw a documentary on how they made it a year or two later on PBS, and that just looked like people doing the coolest stuff with the coolest things with the coolest results. So that kind of got me tuned into visual effects. And then when Back to the Future came out in 1985 and I was in high school, I was like at exactly the right age to just totally get excited by that film and the DeLorean and that shot at the end of the film when it can fly and it goes down that suburban street and it comes back at the camera. That really stuck with me. And I also, when I was in high school, ended up becoming like the photo editor for my yearbook and the newspaper. So I kind of had a little bit of photographic, photochemical background. I also got into computers pretty young too. The Commodore 64 played a big role in my life, programming it first in BASIC and then in machine language. And I kind of realized that as soon as I started to see a little bit of computer graphics coming out in TV shows, that this has got to be the future. So 1991 was the year where I decided with all of these things coming together, somehow I have to make my Chevette fly. I have to like somehow take photos of my Chevette, reconstruct a 3D model of it, texture map it with the photos and make it fly across the screen, just like that DeLorean in Back to the Future. And since I had access to a video digitizer and a camera for a summer job that I had, I put that together and there's this little 64 frame animation of this photogrammetry reconstructed Chevette flying past that I did that summer of 91. And that kind of set the stage for my PhD work that I would do at UC Berkeley.
Debevec's efforts at Berkeley led to a groundbreaking short film that pioneered the creation of entirely synthetic virtual cinematography.
We built this system called Facade, which allowed us to basically reconstruct the Berkeley Tower, the Campanile Tower, photo texture it with photos taken from a kite. So we got texture maps from all the right angles. And then I actually crawled up in the tower and shot pictures from all around to get the panorama of the environment. And with all of those tools, we created this film called The Campanile Movie that we put into the SIGGRAPH 97 Electronic Theater that showed basically virtually flying around the Berkeley campus. We called that virtual cinematography at the time. And then as the story goes, one of the people who was in the audience was John Gaeta, who had a visual effects movie. He was trying to figure out how to solve some of the problems. And he got in touch with us. He hired one of the students from our project. And this photogrammetry technique that we did at Berkeley ended up becoming the technology for the virtual backgrounds in the bullet time shots of The Matrix. And so at that point, it just seemed like this is a pretty cool industry to be a part of. And let's see what else we can do.
Beyond its utility for virtual cinematography, Debevec's work in photogrammetry found many other applications throughout filmmaking and elsewhere.
If you need to make a digital twin of a real place, kind of like was done for The Matrix, and then create the digital version, have it look as realistic as the original, take photos and use one of these photogrammetry packages that's commercially available, like Reality Capture, Agisoft, and also for facial capture. A lot of digital actor creation systems start with taking pictures of faces from a bunch of different directions, solving for 3D geometry based on those photos and then photo texture mapping that in order to create a realistic vision of the face. So it gets used both for like foreground characters and for environments in lots of projects.
The success of Debevec's investigations led to a more permanent position as a technology researcher for filmmaking.
Pretty soon after The Matrix, I did get this job to run a research lab at the USC Institute for Creative Technologies. And because I had done a project using light fields for virtual reality as a collaboration with this company called Otoy, that ended up putting me and ultimately a lot of my group from USC in the crosshairs of Google's acquisition engine as they were trying to bulk up their virtual reality efforts. And so basically they said, we have this opportunity at Google for you and your best folks if you want to come over. And it looked like, well, I wasn't planning on working my entire life at USC, and I've been here for 16 years, so maybe we'll try something different. And so it felt like a death-defying decision to switch out of my very comfortable USC environment and like make the jump over to Google, but did it. And we got to do some really cool things over there with, you know, we built a new light stage. We did create light field technology for VR, both for still scenes, which we launched as the Welcome to Light Fields app that's still on Steam. And also a light field video solution that we were able to publish just toward the end.
Moving from the tech world of Google, Debevic caught the attention of Netflix, a company with one foot in technology and another in filmmaking.
One of our mantras is freedom and responsibility. So you actually have quite a bit of say over what you decide to do and how you decide to do it. There's just a responsibility that this is going to make a difference and, you know, it's going to have an impact for the company. So I'm trying to align what we're doing here at Netflix to really be very much in alignment with what we're good at, what we're passionate about, and what's going to help the kind of film production that Netflix is interested in. And, you know, hopefully eventually the industry as a whole. And in particular, virtual production technology has been a big interest of ours for a long time. A big thing that we've looked at and like our publication so far has been trying to deal with color rendition issues in virtual production stages and finding ways to both make the current virtual production stages that there's hundreds of around the world, find ways to use those more effectively for lighting, and then also to think in the future about advocating for things that we've done previously in our USC ICT work, which is building LED stages that actually have multi-spectral LEDs where you can actually program them to get good color rendition that mimics the kind of light that you would actually have in real-world environments.
In-camera VFX with LED volumes and virtual production has taken the production world by storm, but Debevic sees room for improvement in the overall rendition of accurate color.
One of the things that we noted back in the SIGGRAPH 2002 work with surrounding people with the LEDs is that the spectrum of these light sources was a bit weird. The fact that these RGB LEDs are making their colors out of a little bit of red spectrum, a little bit of green spectrum, and a little bit of blue spectrum with pretty big gaps in between them means that things could possibly look considerably different on a virtual production stage than they do out in natural light. Just because you've created the same response in the human eye, it doesn't mean that you've replicated the same spectrum. When that light actually hits a person or hits costumes, if the spectrum is different than what it was supposed to be, if it's not the spectrum of daylight, but it's just the color of daylight made out of a little bit of red, a little bit of green, a little bit of blue, you easily could get totally weird color shifts.
Debevic theorized the solution was to make the lights more accurate by increasing the coverage of the spectrum.
In 2003, our research project was like, let's build a light source that would be a better light source for lighting actors out of LEDs. It doesn't just have red, green, and blue. So Lightstage X3 had red, green, blue, amber, cyan, and white LEDs at every one of the sites all around the actor. And the work we did with Chloe Legendre, who is actually one of my PhD students back at USC, basically showed that if you have an HDRI map of a real-world scene, no matter what the illuminance and what a color chart looks like in the scene, we can then mathematically drive all six channels of light in the light stage to reproduce not just the colors that you see in the environment, but the color rendition properties of all of the light coming from every direction. And so we have a couple of examples in that paper that shows actors in the light stage versus actors actually really out there in the real environment without any color correction whatsoever. They just match. Like they match to like a 98% accuracy. So it's something that obviously would be really interesting. Can we build a commercial larger scale virtual production stage with better color rendition? But the most recent paper that we published from Netflix with Chloe and working with Scanline, we did show that if you're willing to put a live grade LUT on your footage that you're getting on the stage that's calculated in a certain way, and then inverse correct your in-camera pixels so that they also need that same color correction, you can basically do in-camera visual effects and drive your virtual production stage in a way that you ultimately get pretty satisfying color rendition on skin tones and improved color rendition on costume colors just using RGB LEDs.
Much of Debevec's work is theoretical, but filmmakers often view his research to create innovative imagery for their movies.
I did a couple of films at Berkeley called Rendering with Natural Light, set in the UC Berkeley Eucalyptus Grove, and then Fiat Lux, which is set in St. Peter's Basilica, and that was kind of a mashup between the photogrammetry technology that we used for the Berkeley campus in the Campanile movie, plus the high dynamic range image-based lighting technology. And, you know, at that point there, I had like enough of success making short films about like architecture and objects that it felt like the next thing we got to figure out is how to bring people into these movies. And there's kind of two ways to bring people into computer-generated films. One of which is you make computer-generated people, which if you base them on real people and scans of real people, then you can create CGI characters that are photoreal. But the other way was if we want to bring a real person into a virtual environment, have it look like they're really there, we need that virtual environment to be the lighting on the person. I realized that what you can do is if you get a data set of the person lit from one lighting direction at a time, then you can recombine those images in a technique that's now called image-based relighting to simulate what that person's face or body would look like lit by some other lighting environment. So we actually built this wooden gantry with a single inexpensive Lowell 250 watt spotlight that was held 5 feet away from the face. So the idea was to basically show effectively like the camera moving around the actor in the environment because both the actor and the lighting environment are rotating. And one of our actors from that project, Emily DeGroot, I was directing her in Grace Cathedral and the technology was finally working. I finally occurred to me, you know, I should actually try to direct the actor a little bit too, right? So I told her, if you look up toward the top of the light stage, you can see some of the LEDs are kind of blue. And those are the stained glass windows of Grace Cathedral. And I told her, look from this group of blue lights to this group of blue lights, one to the other, and just imagine that you're seeing something like new and wonderful in every window that you look at. And that was the first indication that surrounding the actors with images of the environment, even incredibly low res as we were doing, actually can be useful for the performance and useful for eye lines and useful for actor immersion.
Stick around. After the break, we'll be back with more from Paul Debevec. This episode of the Virtual Production Podcast is brought to you in part by Silicon Core, pioneers in fine pixel LED display technology for XR and virtual production. Learn more at siliconcore.com. And by Blackmagic Design, one of the world's leading innovators and manufacturers of creative video technology, which also work very well with virtual production. Around this time, Debevec was contacted for a groundbreaking feature film project whose story couldn't be told without major technological breakthroughs.
In 2004, I got a call from our friends at Digital Domain. Turns out they had started to do work on David Fincher's movie, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
How old are you?
7, but I look a lot older.
God bless you. He's 7.
In 2004, to think that you're somehow going to pull off a photoreal digital face of the main character of your movie was ambitious, to say the least, if not just outright foolish. But they were looking into it. And at some point, they brought over a maquette to Light Stage 3. And we lit the maquette with a bunch of different lighting environments. And we did one light at a time data sets. And we gave that to them and they played around with it. And they said, you know, hey, this is great. We could maybe use this technology to light Brad Pitt's face if he's in makeup and we can composite him in. Or maybe we would just use his eye region. And this is something that I think that David Fincher was really on the ball about, is realizing that like the key to a performance is the eyes. And he kind of felt, you know what? I'm pretty sure that we're going to be able to do the face. But he wasn't sure, and Digital Domain wasn't sure, if they could really pull off doing CGI eyes. So one of the ideas was a hybrid idea, which is that they would composite real Brad Pitt's eyes and eye regions into digital versions of the character. And it might have worked, but they knew that they'd have to film Brad Pitt's eyes from the right angles and in the right lighting to composite in accurately. And they asked, is there a way you could get your light stage to even do good eye reflections as well?
Debevic realized the solution was to somehow bring the lighting reference and the actor into the same environment so that they could be captured simultaneously.
I did a little sketch, and I drew a small LED volume made of LED panels, and there was like my little effigy of Brad Pitt lit by this kind of horseshoe-shaped LED volume of panels, and we were going to play back the lighting. And then I started making phone calls like, well, who rents out these panels and who could set up something for a test? So I actually found people in Valencia called Background Images. And they didn't build the whole volume that I had given the picture for, but they did set up a wall. But we went there, we brought a subject, and we did all the tests you do with LED panels. And we photographed Andreas Wenger, one of my researchers at the time and our subject we brought, and we photographed the reflections in the eyes. But when they had the Brad Pitt version of the maquette sculpted by Kazu Tsuji, they did bring that over to our lab. And we light stage scanned the heck out of that head. We got 3D geometry. We got one light at a time data. We lit it with different lighting environments from light stage 3. We gave all that to Digital Domain. And that actually ended up being helpful for them in getting the digital head of Benjamin Button lit realistically and accurately to how the stand-in actor had been lit. And I actually had a chance to talk to Claudio Miranda when the film came out. And I asked him, like, well, how well do you think Digital Domain did in replicating your lighting intention for all those scenes of Brad Pitt? And Claudio just said, I think they got it spot on. And that's pretty good compliments to Digital Domain. So that actually ended up being the first SciTech Academy Award that my team got, which was for the light stage technology helping out in the curious case of Benjamin Button.
As a longtime academic, Debevic has plenty of guidance for new learners interested in virtual production and other groundbreaking filmmaking technologies.
I think there's tons of great stuff in understanding how visual effects once was done. Like learning how photochemical processes were done is like super inspirational. There's courses like that. You know, get Craig Barron's book, The Invisible Art, about the history of matte painting.
This devastated city is actually the work of legendary matte painter Albert Whitlock.
A lot of the things that made Star Wars happen, so many of those techniques actually have a long history themselves. Like, dear gosh, there were matte paintings in Gone with the Wind. The entire ceilings of gorgeous mansions were painted after the fact and put in on glass. Right now, I think taking a machine learning course is pretty important. The next 5 years are going to be extremely interesting because of how this is going to affect just about everything in image creation. I went to what may have been the first AI film festival that they held over at the Alamo Drafthouse in the Mission. And it was like an hour-long program of AI-generated films. Most of them were trippy. Some of them were rough. Some of them showed, oh my God, this is incredibly powerful technology that we have just not seen the likes of ever before. So I think that the tools of tomorrow or even the near future are actually going to be hybrids of the tools that we have today, augmented with machine learning technology and deep network technology.
Debevic also sees applications for high-end technology at more consumer-level purposes.
When I actually got to be part of a project at Google that was like a classic case of that, we had this desire for the Pixel phone to relight photos of a person in post, right? Sometimes you take your selfie is not amazingly lit. Maybe you could put better lighting on your selfie. So how do you relight a face in post? Well, we knew how if you took a person to a light stage and we captured this one light at a time or OLAT data set with image-based lighting, you can light the face any which way you want. But we're not going to take everybody that we can to our light stage. We want this to just work with somebody who has a phone in their pocket. What we realized is that we can combine this image-based relighting technique, which is, you know, at this point, like a classic technique of computer graphics, and augment it with machine learning, where we don't get a light stage data set of you, but we get a light stage data set of a bunch of other people. We actually brought 70 people through the Google light stage, and each one of them, we had stand in there, we lit them from 331 directions, because we had that many multispectral LED lights on the stage. We shot them from a number of camera viewpoints. We had them put on different hats, different coats, vests, scarves, glasses, facial expressions. We got a few million images of data. And so you just train an algorithm off of just these 70 people. We didn't know if that would be enough. It turned out to be pretty good. So now if it sees somebody that's never seen before, it can hallucinate. This is what this person under random light would look like under flat light. This is what they look like under light from the right, light from the left. This is what their 3D surface shape would be. And from a single 2D photo now, you can relight that single 2D photo. And that actually is a shipping feature called portrait light in the Pixel 6 and now the Pixel 7 phone. And it's probably only one research paper away from being in the realm of like, you could actually relight your actors in your scene. I think it's going to be possible that you could film your actors on stage and not really worry so much about how you're lighting them when you're capturing the performances. And then from that footage, you could actually craft the lighting. The cinematographer could apply all of their skill and all of their craft to just knowing how to make this thing really underscore the story. And it's going to be a lot more like a film editor.
Debevic has a front row seat to observe where entertainment creation may evolve in the not so distant future.
If you extrapolate with what you can do with just image creation right now, it kind of looks like we're on an exponential curve at the moment. And it's entirely reasonable to think that we're going to get to a point where you can ask for your movie and it creates it. Before I worked for Netflix, Carolyn Giardina from The Hollywood Reporter asked me, you know, where I thought this stuff was going. And I said, decades from now, you'll be able to create your movie just by feeding a computer copy of your script. And if you want it even in the style of a particular director, you say like, do it in the style of Tarantino or Scorsese or Greta Gerwig, it would actually create the film in that style. And I wrote decades for now to give myself some safety because, you know, in all honesty, okay, this is crazy talk, right? Today, I think there's only one thing wrong with what I said, and it's the decades from now part. It's not going to be decades from now. It's going to be a few years from now. One of the folks from the Google team said he expects that there will be short films made almost entirely with ML technologies. It's like a legit viable, just as good as any other short film that we make today, that'll happen within a year and a half. And so feature films within 5 years is it's a possibility. It's something that we should be excited about and maybe even a little bit prepared for.
Debevic sees the audience as the ultimate winner by receiving a greater and greater variety of choices for things to watch and experience.
I think there's absolutely going to be pivoting, but it's just going to mean we have more powerful tools to achieve our vision more completely and more efficiently than we ever did before. And I think ultimately what this is going to mean in terms of what kinds of entertainment you'll be able to find on, you know, in your theaters or any given streaming service is that there's going to be more of it. It's going to be more likely to find something that's really up your alley, and it's going to be done with a lot more production value because the budgets that we have available to create productions are going to go so much further because we have so much more powerful tools. Pivoting is going to be important, or learning new skill sets. And that's been important for a long time. I got to watch the Light and Magic documentary on Disney Plus about creating Star Wars to Jurassic Park.
Visual effects create the magic that makes people want to go to the movies.
And very notably, Jurassic Park was a turning point away from stop motion animation into computer animation.
We all started to plan it out as the conventional stop motion, go motion, rod puppet, high speed with a little bit of computer graphics.
People figured out, you know what, we can do the dinosaurs better with CGI than even the best stop motion that we can do. Phil Tippett, who was the big stop motion person at the time, was very concerned about this for a while. But it turns out, fundamentally, his creativity and his understanding of motion and weight and character were the most valuable things that he had, even more about how to move the arm of the creature the right amount for the next frame and take the picture. And with a bit of retooling, he made Starship Troopers happen. It's the 25th anniversary of Star Trek. Look at the animation in that. Look at the visual effects in that. Fire! If you want to keep doing it the way that it's always been done, you might find that there's less of that going on and that you might be getting left behind by folks who are embracing the new techniques. But if you're as excited as I am and so many of the people in our industry of kind of like welcoming the new possibilities, willing to go to some lectures, do some experiments, and figure out how these new tools can work as part of your workflow, I think you're going to have way more excitement than you would have ever had if we hadn't had this new stuff.
Listening to the Virtual Production Podcast. Thanks again to my guest, Paul DeBevic, for joining us. This episode was written and hosted by me, Noah Kadner. This episode was edited and mixed by Corey Abel. The Virtual Production Podcast is a co-production of The Virtual Company and Abel Cine. We love virtual production and would also love to work with you. So please visit our websites and drop us a line if we can help. You can find us at ablecine.com, and thevirtual.co. The Virtual Production Podcast is brought to you in part by Puget Systems, an integrator specializing in high-end desktop systems perfectly suited to virtual production. Please visit them at pugetsystems.com. The Virtual Production Podcast is also brought to you in part by Rowe Visual, setting the gold standard in LED technologies for virtual production. Learn more at rowevisual.com. Please also let us know if there's a subject or guest you want us to have on the show. And if you like what you heard today, please consider giving us a 5-star review, subscribing, and telling all your friends about us. Thanks again, and see you next time.